Has this ever happened to you?
I'll use my mending shout to heal your damage.
Wait a minute. Shouting doesn't heal wounds. My immersion!
Have you ever found yourself struggling with the historical inaccuracies in modern games?
These clothes are nothing like what my half-drow wizard would have actually worn.
Have you been wondering if there's a better way?
There has to be a better way.
Well, now there is! Introducing new and improved Heartbreaker, combining all the fun of role-playing with the satisfying crunch you desire, including weapon breakage tables, randomized hit location, complex farming rules, high lethality, and so much more.
Now with Heartbreaker, I never have to deal with the pesky issue of choosing what I want to play as. I just roll the dice, find the table, and voila! Now I'm a level 1 shit farmer with a strength of 5. Thanks, Obama!
Call now and we'll throw in the Heartbreaker supplement system absolutely free. Add over 70 more skills, 100 more feats, and dozens of merits and flaws. So get your credit cards ready and call today.
Call today at 1-800-HEARTBREAKERS. That's 1-800-HEARTBREAKERS. We accept all major credit cards and 3 minor credit cards. Void where prohibited. Prohibitive where voided. Ask your parents before calling, but call anyway. This message was not rated by the FDA. Side effects of heartbreakers include neckbeards, thinking you can drain your dice, and virginity. Call today.
All right, welcome to Afterthought, the podcast where every other week John and I get together and talk about whatever the hell we want. How you doing, John?
I'm doing so fabulous.
I'm glad to hear it. This is going to be an especially busy week for us. First of all, I feel like we probably need to explain ourselves at least a little bit.
No, I don't think we ever
No, you don't want to do that? You don't want to cover the incident?
Ah, the happening.
Yeah, an occasion is occurring. No, we... Okay, so fine. We'll just move on from that. In that case, we have a couple of... We have a couple of key things we need to cover. First of all, our good friend of the show, David Sherdwan, has recently got in contact with me to let him know that the 200-word RPG challenge is starting up again. And in fact, actually has started up again as of a couple of days ago. That will run through April 16th. So if you'd like to be involved or just to find out more about it, just Google the 200-word RPG challenge, or we will have a link directly to it in the description of this episode. We covered a few of the 200-word RPGs that spawned from last year's challenge when we did our micro RPG review episode. It's a really, really cool idea. It's a little contest where you get together 200 words to create one RPG. And it's plain text. You can't use cheating by putting in images and pictures of dice and so on. So it's a really cool, mind-bending challenge, a sort of way to really boil down what an RPG is to its base elements. We are big fans of it. I'm hoping it goes forward. In fact, this year I'm actually planning to enter. I have a game I've been working on, but I don't want to say a thing about it because I don't want people to vote for me because it's me. Fair enough? Yeah.
No one's going to vote
for me. So there you go. Also, interesting note, and we're going to get to this in just a second, but today we actually have a guest on the show. We've got our good friend of the show, James D'Amato, from the One Shot and Campaign Podcast. His partner and the host of the Campaign Podcast, Kat Cool, is one of the judges for the 200-word RPG Challenge this year, and I believe last year as well.
So, that is correct.
There's James now. James D'Amato, everybody.
I did not know when to come in on that, but I did want
okay.
to point out
that's
that
right.
you
it was
did do it last year, too.
Yeah, no, it's fine. That's fine. These shows have no rules.
No, you ruined it. Everything's terrible.
Starting
now.
Over. No, we got one last thing to do, which is just real quick here. Whenever we have someone who gives us $10 an episode on our Patreon for 5 episodes in a row, they get to supply us with something that we read on the air. And it doesn't matter what it is, we have to read it, and they get to choose who reads it, they get to tell us if they want music behind it, it's a whole complicated thing. This week we are reading something from, I'm going to go ahead and say his name here, we also get let them pick their name for what we have to read on the air for that too, so instead of his real name, I must say that it's Vicomte Fizzop Y Valador Fiddledix, the 4th Vicomte of Fiddledix. And then John is going to go ahead and handle the reading. Once again, if you give us $10 per episode, 5 episodes in a row, this could be you. You can describe up to about 5 minutes of our time, anything, as long as it's not, well, you know, inhuman. We have to read things that meet a limited amount of good taste.
Yeah.
John, you ready to go?
Yes, I am.
I am giving you the floor.
The following is courtesy of Carl Waldhart, via his eldest son. Yo, 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 fam, it's the Juggalos for John Kasich, and we asked the fuck out. The Hatchet Man has the rational, moderate, right-of-center platform to show this country the MFWKL motherfucking wicked clown love that it deserves. His even-handed experience as governor of Ohio demonstrates his mad, nasty, flexible pragmatism as his dick slanging on both sides of the aisle. His courage in staying above the whack circus chaos politics of the GOP truly shows that this writer has the axe to be down with the clowns till he dead in the ground. What, what?
And there you go. So, as always, that's for our wonderful Patreon supporters, right? We had last time it was reading a short story about a dinosaur who went off into the woods to find some friends.
Yep.
It's always something. So, so there you go.
I got to get in on this.
Right? Yeah. Well, actually, we've already invited you. We're hoping you'll... Well, actually, let's discuss that off the air. We'll take that off mic. Instead, why don't we talk about the reason that you're here, your Kickstarter for Noisy Person Cards. We're both pretty excited to hear about this. It's the reason you're doing your big promotional tour. Let's talk all about it.
Your little baby promo tour.
Tiny little insignificant promo tour. Thank you guys so much for allowing me to come on the show and shill my product to your viewers. It shows a tremendous amount of respect for me and a tremendous amount of disrespect for the people who listen to you guys. And I really appreciate
that.
That's
all I show.
We'd be more worried about that if we hadn't basically built our fan base by poaching yours.
So Noisy Person Cards is a party game that I developed with Cat Cool, my partner on the One Shot Podcasting Network, to help people become more comfortable with using character voices at the table when they roleplay.
Okay.
So it's a party game that's got the similar setup to games like Cards Against Humanity or Apples to Apples, where everyone at the table is prompted by a judge with a character card, and everybody's got a hand of phrase cards, and your goal is to say one of your phrase cards in the voice of the character that you're being prompted to. And the judge decides who did it best, and rounds of that should get everybody at the table leaving the table with some voices that they know other people appreciate and want to hear. So it just gamifies working out that skill.
No, that's really cool. I like that idea.
Yeah.
Do you have a sample of it around? Can we give it a try?
Actually, I do have a sample of it. It is at paracosmpress.com. That is the publishing company that Kat and I are running together, Paracosm Press. That's P-A-R-A-C-O-S-M, because nobody can spell that stupid word. That's Paracosm Press /NPC. And not just you guys, but anybody can go to that site and download a print-and-play copy of Noisy Person Cards for free.
Nice.
That includes 100 phrase cards and 50 character cards. And the actual game that will be coming out on Kickstarter is going to be about 5 times that size.
Wow.
But it gives you enough of a sample to play for like an hour or so to see if you like it.
Okay. Well, I was kind of thinking maybe we could just force John to do some voices.
Absolutely. We can force John to do some voices. Well, man, I should have thought of that beforehand because John's so good at voices.
Oh, it's okay. I actually have your game open now.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I am just now opening it up for the first time. Let's see here.
And it looks
like
this garbage. Never mind.
This is kind of neat. I see you've got a prompt for kind of a mood or an emotion to be displaying. And then it looks like I am looking at the voice deck and not at the name deck. Oh, here we go. Okay, here's a name deck. So I'm just going to do this by flipping through at random and finding a name deck and then just skipping right back through and making people read the voices. And we'll just do a quick round of this so we can show people what it is.
Heck yeah.
All right, so let's see. John, I am going to start with you, and I'm going to randomly give you a talking sword.
A talking sword?
Talking in my house? A sword?
Talking to me?
And it's talking? Oh my gosh. If you haven't watched it yet, James, go check out A Talking Cat sometime.
Talking cat. Great.
A talking cat is the world's most low energy, worst movie about a cat that can talk, and it's voiced by Julia Roberts' famous brother, Eric Roberts.
Oh, of course, Eric Roberts. Man, his contributions to acting are unignorable.
Yeah. It's too long to mention.
Yeah. All right, here we go. John, you are a talking sword, and your line, which is going to be delivered in an injured tone, is, sure, when you sew bodies back together, it's called stitches, but when I do it, it's called necromancy. Buy us much. That's a question at the end there. Buy us much?
What?
You know, do you have a lot of bias?
Oh, bias. I thought it was buy as much.
No, it was buy ass much.
Buy ass much.
No.
Brought to you by Blamco.
He's trying to sell ass at the end of the card. That's what we really wanted to inject in there.
Buy much ass.
Buy ass much? Come on, man.
So, okay, once again, that was sure. When you sew bodies back together, it's called stitches. But when I do, it's called necromancy. Buy as much? In the voice of a talking sword.
No.
No, you know,
I need to actually have that.
You have to have it in front
me.
Of you. Okay, that's fair. I can see that. And you're pretty far away from the screen.
I'm now with the new setup, I'm like 20 feet away. I can't see anything you're doing.
That's
I'm in the other room. I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Fine, I'll tell you what. Instead, why don't you open up and read one of our random questions from a listener in the voice of a talking sword?
Ooh, there we go.
And you have to be injured when you do it.
All right.
In a lightly used RPG book, you find a hot dog in a bun, pressed between two pages in the spells section. Eat it. Oh, note, your players are 5 minutes from your house. You'll have to eat it fast if you do.
Okay. A vaguely a little sarcastic.
Well, yeah, it's a talking sword.
Yeah.
And he's injured, I think, extends to, like, offended or upset, so I could see that.
Yes, he is emotionally injured. Someone has not chipped the sword.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I could see that. So it's... So you're talking... Oh, I also appreciate the adherence to plain English, because the only talking sword I can think of offhand is Stormbringer, who would have put a bunch of these and thous in there.
Thou hast found a hot dog? The hotted dog?
I love it. All right, and then let's see. I'll give this a shot. I'll randomly select one for myself here. Hang on.
I can give you a random character card, and you just randomly select one of the phrases.
Sure, fire away.
All right, so you are going to be a lizard folk.
Ooh, okay. All right, and it looks like the one I've picked at random is in an impolite tone.
That's Ziplatimus, the unyielding storm of the north to you. I didn't spend 7 years battling Gorfo, the unspoken, to be called Mr. Ziplatimus.
Oh, I got spit all over my pop filter.
That's what it's there for.
So I'm going to jump in and talk about those descriptors that you've been reading on the underside of the phrases.
Those descriptors
are actually a gameplay mechanic that we developed to make it a little bit more interesting than the other party games that I mentioned at the top. Because like it's really basic play to just match one thing up with another thing. But if you, for instance, have a card full of hands or a handful of cards that you don't like, you can... discard one of those cards and attach that modifier to the character card and force everybody else to read it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you're not eligible to win the round that way, but it helps you cycle through your deck. And if for whatever reason you're uncomfortable doing a particular voice, it lets you bow out of the round while making the game more fun instead of less fun.
Okay, so if you like, for example, if someone tells you you have to do the voice of a fishman, you can pass on doing the fishman voice, and in exchange for that, make everyone else speak impolitely for the rest of that round.
Exactly.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, I dig that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. All right, so let's see. This is currently up on Kickstarter, right? That would have started on...
the 11th of April.
But
people can sign up on the Paracosm Press website right now to join the mailing list. The NPC mailing list, we're going to be sending out two emails, one the night before we launch our Kickstarter and one on the day of the Kickstarter, just to let people know that it's happening.
Okay, cool. And why don't you tell me how much you know about the Kickstarter so far? Do you have stretch goals? Do you have plans? Do you have levels?
So right now, we are actually trying to avoid stretch goals. We do have one stretch goal that is at $70,000 on the Kickstarter. Somebody approached us before we put the game up and like talked about Kickstarter for it right after we put up the print and play, saying, hey, how would you guys feel about me making an NPC app? And we were like, well, that's crazy. And like 2 weeks or 3 weeks before we, you know, were ready to launch the Kickstarter, he contacted us back with a working prototype for an app.
Oh, nice.
So if we get $70,000, we will be able to pay him to develop it the rest of the way. The working prototype that we have right now works for both iOS and Android, so that'll be, like, basically ready to go if we hit that level. But what we're doing, instead of focusing on stretch goals, is we want to focus on social goals.
Okay.
Which, for folks who are new to Kickstarter stuff and haven't been knee-deep in thinking about how to game the system for the past couple of months, a social goal is something like retweeting an ad for NPC that we have. And, like, if we get 1,000 retweets, we will be revealing some of the art for the game to you guys. So that way, without people having to feel like they're pressured to up their donation or do anything other than just buy the game, they can unlock extra things for the Kickstarter.
Okay, that's cool. I like that idea. And do you have a base price for the Kickstarter at this point?
Yes, we need to hit 32,000 in order to be able to do the first print run of the game and pay everybody who is involved with the project. We got several, you know, cartoonists that we really like to get involved with the project, like Jess Fink and Will Kirkby, and we want to make sure that they're compensated fairly. Actually, a little bit of peek behind the curtain, we've already paid everybody involved with the project, so all that money came right out of our pockets. So we want to make sure that we can afford to have already given away the money that we did. And we want, you know, a solid distribution because we don't want to be one of the Kickstarters that doesn't fulfill.
Because yeah, absolutely.
That's not good for anybody. But no. Yeah, the $32,000 goal will get us there and make sure that the game gets in your hands in a reasonable amount of time.
Also, I really like that social goals thing because I see a lot of the Kickstarters that feel like they need to add on so many stretch goals because they see the huge Kickstarters go like, I've got 57 different stretch goals, and here's one for $1,000,000.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
It's crazy, and like it's like watching a slow motion car wreck for some of them because like they keep going like, oh, we'll give you T-shirts and postcards and all these things that we have to mail and pay to mail to you, and we definitely didn't do the math on that mailing, so it's never gonna show up.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was our second or third episode of System Mastery we ever did. We were reviewing one of my favorite games growing up as a kid, but, you know, it doesn't hang together all that well nowadays, which is called Tales from the Floating Vagabond. And the author, which is an awesome game, the author of Tales from the Floating Vagabond actually got in touch with us. And we were like, how did that happen? We have 8 listeners. How did he get this? but sure enough, he gets his hands on it on our review and sends us an email just to kind of complain that we missed a few things and to mention that he has a Kickstarter starting. So out of a sense of feeling bad about dumping on an old game right when the Kickstarter launched, I backed it. And that was 2.5 years ago, and I don't have that book yet.
Wow.
So, it's okay. You're doing better than the people that backed Exalted 3rd Edition.
Oh, that book's almost there now.
It has been almost there for about a year.
Exalted 3rd Edition. That is a crazy story. Anyway, I was asking about your top-level goal, your $32,000 you need to do the distribution. Mm-hmm. But what about individual buyers? What can they expect to pay to get a copy of your game?
So a copy of the game is just $30. We're including a lot more art than things like Cards Against Humanity or Utter Nonsense, those similar format games.
Yeah,
so ours is a little bit more expensive. Usually those things retail at about $25, so the extra $5 is for the art. And I think we're actually not sure on this because we have a separate firm who's calculating the shipping for us. Mm-hmm. But I think you can expect shipping to be for the United States at around $5. Don't hold me to that because the math is not in on it yet. But now Kickstarter charges shipping separately, so you'll be able to see exactly how much it is. But the $30 gets you the game.
No, that sounds very reasonable to me. I mean, after all, I think I've spent something like $300 on Cards Against Humanity, counting it up over time every time I buy something new for it or a box to hold the things I previously bought.
Yeah, and all of your Sentinels of the Multiverse cards.
I'm a diehard Sentinels of the Multiverse person, and I think I've spent somewhere in the range of $300 on that as well.
Yeah, so I'm very relieved to hear that because we were so nervous about doing a product that's a little bit more expensive than the others that are already everywhere.
I mean, ultimately, what you're coming down to is you have to get into that nerd hobby market, and these are people who will spend $50 on 4 plastic horses. So a $30,
I know I will.
Yeah. So so a $30 game that you can play over and over again is extremely reasonable. I feel like that's right in the wheelhouse, right, John?
Well, yeah. Given that I've bought like $120 board game. Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, not only that, but you have, what does Pandemic Legacy go for?
Like $65, $70?
$65 for a game that you will have to throw away. So I think you've definitely got a solid price point there. I think that sounds great.
Well, I hope so. And there's like all sorts of goals for people if they want, for instance, their D&D character to be used in one of the cards, whether it's in the art or just have us write a card about them. They can do that. So there are all sorts of neat other backer levels. If you're one of those people who just needs to throw your money at a Kickstarter, we're going to let you do that for sure.
Of course. Yeah. I think we're probably going to need to do that, John.
I don't want your money.
We need to get a couple characters into this game.
Yeah. I need everyone to know about my half-elf bard.
I want people to know about Captain Beef Dip. Oh, man. All right. So, James, you know you're on the Afterthought episode. Does that mean you are interested in answering some listener questions with us?
Oh, absolutely. I'm interested in answering these listener questions.
All right. That's great. All right. Well, we actually have one that's for you. And it looks as though you've already answered half of it for us. This one came to us over the Twitter. I noticed when we put out a Twitter request, you jumped in and answered a couple of those questions, which was great, so that people could get like detailed written down information about upcoming Kickstarter stuff. There was one left behind. Part of it was about stretch goals. So it just says noisy person cards. Stretch goals? Well, we've covered that. And then he wants to know about color cards.
The cards are in color already. That's what we priced them at the printer that we're going to. So the cards will definitely be in color.
Awesome. And then art to text ratio, which I'm guessing that's the sort of thing you ask someone who's been working at Magic for 15 years.
Yeah.
But if you know it,
ballparking the ratio, I'd say probably only about 10% of the cards will have art. That's because the phrase cards themselves are simply just text. That's part of the mechanics of the game. Mm-hmm. Many of the character cards are going to have art on them. And that, again, is art provided by our comics buddies. Like the lead artist on the project is Kevin Budnick, who does a series of great comics about his life. But he's also done a couple comics about D&D, and we love them so much we had him do art for the project. And you'll be able to see that on character cards, just in case you need a little bit more prompting than just a description of what the character is.
Cool. Well, that sounds great.
Yeah, no, that definitely helps with some of the characters that if you weren't familiar with that, you go, okay, well, now I can actually see and get my head around it.
Yeah, you're Captain Beef Dips and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Man, if I can get him into that game, that would be amazing.
Well, like if someone puts down, like, one of the characters is a Yawn-Ti, and you're like, I don't know what that is.
Oh, yeah, it's a half snake. Yeah. Now I just want to know which kind of Yawn-Ti it is. Is it a regular? Is it a Malaisan? I'm curious. An abomination?
That's for you to figure out.
All right. So cool. That was a question from Alex DeMille or at Alex DeMille on Twitter. Next one comes to us. We already had a talking sword ask this question, but let's go ahead and throw it out there anyway. From at Dr. Captain Cobalt, in a lightly used RPG book, you find a hot dog in a bun. Hot dog questions, by the way. Press between two pages in the spell section. Eat it? Note, your players are 5 minutes from your house. You'll have to eat it fast if you do. So what do you think? We'll let James go first. And remember,
I got to ask a follow-up question on that.
Yeah, the rules for hot dog questions is any follow-up questions you want, I have the answers.
Okay, so my first follow-up question, you mentioned that it's a lightly used RPG book, but what system is it?
Oh, good question. What system is it? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say that this is a second edition Cinnabar copy.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a big paperbound. It's a lot like a Palladium Press book. Picture of a four-armed mutant driving a motorcycle while a hot lady behind him shoots lasers at a giant dragon.
Okay.
If I'm remembering my Cinnabar cover.
Second follow-up question, which spells are it in?
Oh, shoot, it's in the Earth Power spells section.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
If it was in Alchemy, I'm right out.
Alchemy. I'm doing my best right now to not flail and trying to remember the spell sections from Cinnabar. Earth Power, it's between Tree Beam and Summon Tree Demon.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if it's touching the Tree Demon, I'm in 100%. That's gold.
I am going to have to pass on this one because I remember Cinnabar being fairly lethal, and I'm expecting a trap.
Ooh, good call. It's a trap. Yeah. All right. So, John, you're going to go for the hot dog?
I'm going for the hot dog.
All right. The other big rule about hot dog questions is there's no right answers. So
everyone's correct.
It's really just a question about you, not about the hot dog.
Yeah.
even the one where the hot dog question was, there is a hot dog in a trap. Do you get trapped for that hot dog?
You find a hot dog. It is baking in the sun, and it cannot turn over. You're not helping it. why aren't you helping that hot dog?
All right, and next question comes to us from, once again, that was from at Dr. Captain Cobalt on Twitter. Next question, this was one that was asked to us before we knew we were going to have you on, but honestly, our answer was just going to be no, so I'm really glad you're here because you've got a longer history and a bigger fan base. Maybe this what actually applies to you.
Yeah, because the question is, are you a big, dumb idiot? And so were going to say no. So.
John, nailed it.
Hey, it's not a show if I'm not an asshole.
Oh, boy. The question from Wolfman Jack. Sup, boners. Are you guys popular enough to have fan horror stories yet? If so, please share them. If not, why not make one up?
Yeah, I don't think I have a fan horror story yet. Luckily, I think I've been lucky enough that most of the fans that I have are all interested in the same thing. So, like, when I talk to them, they all just talk about role playing.
Yeah,
and there's very little chance for that to get super weird, especially in like conventions where there are so many people around you that you hop from conversation to conversation really easily. Man, but if I'm going to have to make it up, I think Kat and I were driving out to a catacomb, which was like deep in this woodsy area at this hotel covered in vultures. And while we were like almost there, we were pulling up. I'd say we're about 2 or 3 miles away from the hotel. It's pitch black in the middle of the night. There are trees on either side. Somebody had set a spike trap out for our car. We crashed, and when we woke up, we found that we were shackled in a subterranean basement of some sort, surrounded by bones, in a floor that was so slick with blood that it sloshed around in the dark. And the only way we were able to escape was by tricking one of the other unfortunate podcasters who got trapped in the basement with us to chew his own hand off so that he could undo our chains. And we tripped him on our way out so that we were able to escape. But he most certainly was eaten by that madman.
Well, I think we've all been there.
Yeah. And let me say, my first thought when I heard you saying that was that the house was literally covered in vultures, like
top to bottom,
with wallpaper paste.
Oh, that wasn't fake. The hotel that a catacomb was at had vultures all over the roof. It is one of the most unnerving things that I've ever done. Like, we drove through these super dark woods, came out just as the sun was setting to see swarms of vultures circling overhead. And it turns out that hotel is haunted as fuck.
Nice. We actually...
I remember my personal horror story with a fan, which was just, we were walking around at, it was just Comic-Con, someone found us randomly, and they came up, and I thought they were going to give me a hug, which was a little awkward, but then as the knife slowly slipped into my side, he just leaned in close and said, "Elric of Melnibone sends his regards."
You have no idea how angry people are at us about not liking Stormbringer very much. It is, it was a year ago, and it haunts us. They are so mad.
That game is terrible, but you guys are super wrong about those stories.
Oh, well, that's the thing. We came out swinging because we've never read those stories. But why get into that again? That's just going to bring more hate from more fans. I'm gonna find another dog's head on my porch tomorrow now. Anyway. I think more or less I just agree with you on this one. Our fan base is roughly the same. They're there for a reason. As long as we stick to that reason, they stick to it too. I think we've had a couple occasions where in an afterthought a question about like religion or politics came up, and all of a sudden we have to block our comment section for a day. Ugh. But for the most part, it's just the best. And I've only ever met one of our fans. At Comic-Con, I was working at my friend's booth, and he came up and said, "Are you the Jeff from System Mastery?" And then he had me sign his Comic-Con ticket, and then he left. And that was the one time I've ever met any of our fans. We're getting ready to do our first ever convention as System Mastery. And
how did he think to find you?
Oh, he knew I was going to be there. I tweeted that I would be there, and I was wearing a System Mastery shirt. I might be the only person at Comic-Con who was. I think there's a grand total of about 25 of our shirts out in the world.
Oh, yeah, and God knows I don't have one of them. That's for nerds.
Oh my gosh! So yeah, he came and found me. That was cool. But yeah, we're getting ready to actually meet fans for the first time, like on purpose at what's it called?
KublaCon
in San Francisco in May. So that should be a new experience. We'll see if we get any horror stories out of that.
Yeah, I encourage your audience to try and freak these two out at KublaCon. You know, really get into them.
Yeah, yeah, just come on. Just say creepy things to us. Here's a list of my family's first names.
Here's a list of my biggest fears.
Here's the spider I'd least like to have thrown at me.
Man. The spider is man I would least like to have thrown at me.
It's always man. The answer is always man.
The most dangerous spider is man.
Then Wolfman Jack also asks us to talk about unknown armies and points out that that shit is awesome. I'm going to go ahead and say I agree, and that we'll probably get that in a review someday.
And so, there is a Kickstarter for the next edition of Unknown Armies out right now.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have heard of Unknown Armies because I listen to Ken and Robin talk about stuff, and they talk about it ceaselessly.
Yeah. It's
the kind of game where if you're into it, that is what you do.
Yeah, it's right up there with, like, what In Nomine or Dracula Dossier, where you just don't let it go.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. Next question comes to us from Blake S. He actually has a couple different questions for us. I think he even pops up again further down the list because my editing is terrible. If you could rename stats, what would you name them? Do you think it's better to have generalized definitions or more specific definitions? That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, if I could rename stats, I'd probably have them be like Jim or Billy.
God damn.
Stephanie.
Dexterity has always struck me as a Stephanie.
Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely.
You got to have a Stephanie.
I feel like this is
Stephanie's superiority in games has been really out of hand lately.
Yeah, especially when it messes up the action economy. I think this is one of those ones where you have to be careful to walk a tightrope when you're answering it. Because if you're just like, all right, well, dexterity is agility and strength is might and constitution is toughness, then that's just synonyms and it doesn't really matter. I think one of the cool things you could talk about here is how some games, I throw out Fate as an example, have switched out stats to the point where it's, if something is relevant to your character, then it is one of your statistics. But if it isn't relevant to your character, then it isn't.
Yeah.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool. Like if your character is, if panache is a really big deal to your character, make up a panache stat and give it to your character.
The other one being the Golden Sky stories, which has stats like adult or child.
Oh, they're just static values?
Well, it's just, okay, here's the adult stat is I can use technology, I know how to get around in the adult world. The child stat is knowing about, like, dreams and wonder and being able to influence people and get what you want. So it's interesting that they would combine everything into a theme rather than a specific thing.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the instinct to on why you're changing it matters more than whether or not it should actually be changed. Like, there are a lot of heartbreakers out there that will change the name of a stat simply to be different than Dungeons & Dragons.
That is very true.
It's not actually accomplishing anything for the system. But if you're designing something that, you know, truly has a unique concept that needs to be conveyed through a stat, I don't feel like you should feel pressured to shoehorn it into dexterity, because as they've pointed out, dexterity is already vastly overpowered in so many other games.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there. And I feel like one of the other examples of that was so great for us was Fantasy Wargaming, the highest level of all, which starts with two chapters trash talking D&D and saying there has to be a better way. Incidentally, you have six stats that range between 3 and 18. So I feel like, and not only that, they had slightly different names. They were like agility and might and so on. It's the sort of thing where you really need to think about why you're putting a stat in the game and if it's a big part of your game. I'm still waiting for someone to build a game where combat doesn't represent four out of your six stats, if you even have six stats.
I mean, Monster Hearts does that.
Oh, yeah. No, Monster Hearts, that's another game that people ask us to talk about constantly, and it's just too
good.
Which
I totally would. I would love to talk about Monster Hearts.
It is so good. It's very much on our list, and you're right, it definitely does that. Okay, next question, also from Blake S. You're in a cable car with broken brakes that is traveling down a track that will kill five construction workers. Mm-hmm. You have the chance to switch the cable car to a track that will kill only one. What do you do? All right, so this is one of them philosophy 101 questions, because if you don't do anything, then you didn't act, and there's a cable car that killed people. But if you act and kill the one guy, then you're the murderer.
Okay, well, yeah. The answer, obviously, being that I've worked in construction, is I purposefully kill five construction workers because I know them.
Is there a way I can get that other guy, too? Can I pick up the spare?
Are we allowed to ask follow-up questions?
I'm going to allow it because it doesn't say anything otherwise here.
It's cable car questions.
Yeah.
If I make a decision one way or the other, how likely am I to get a hot dog out of it?
One of those five guys has a hot dog in his hand, and he's holding it way out, like, to the side for some reason.
I kill the five guys. I kill the five guys.
I get one of them five guys hot dogs.
Oh, man, those are... You could have had the burger. It could have been yours. So there you go. It's it's one of them, are you a sociopath questions. Actually, this one's one of those, a legality question, because if you're just standing there, then you can't be held legally responsible. But, yeah, Samaritan laws. Yay. Okay. Next. Oh, I would also kill five guys just because that way I could say I did that when that franchise eventually goes down.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes to us from @Infocorn. Love this guy. And he says, after all the hoo-ha and flapdoodle on the Warrior Rogue Mage... Oh, yeah, this is another one for you. Mm-hmm. After all the hoo-ha and flapdoodle on the Warrior Rogue Mage episode, is there a voice you won't do?
This is a reference to the only episode of One Shot that we've had to take down. And the reason we had to take it down, we played Warrior Rogue Mage, which is a pretty cool light fantasy system. And it allows you to piecemeal build your character. And one of the players had chosen a hireling as one of their abilities. And whenever I get a hireling in games, I always want to strongly imply to the party that you can really only use them for simple menial tasks. And I want to make them too dumb to do anything complicated so that they're not tempted to just use the hireling for everything and not play the game. Mm-hmm. So I did a big dumb guy voice for the character, and a couple people started making jokes about his genetics, and it went all downhill from there. So we ended up taking that episode down. And I think ultimately for decisions like that, like whether I'm doing it publicly or doing it at the table, something they tell you in Second City when you are performing on stage is that it's okay to play stupid people so long as you play dumb people to the top of their intelligence. And I definitely did not play that character to the top of his intelligence. So it's, I think, contextual. I don't think that there are many voices I won't do apart from, like, obviously overtly racist accents. Right. But there are certain voices that I will approach with more care.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I had no idea there was so much historical context to this question. I figured it was just sort of a what voices do you know you can't do type thing.
Oh, I figured it was someone had done a voice that people took some umbrage with.
We had that early on as well. I think it was me accidentally using the word autistic in a negative capacity that came down on us, and we've just stopped using it in that way, which is you know, apologized for it and moved on. So yeah, but anyway, John, is there any voice you won't do?
I mean, obviously any of the offensively bad ones.
Yeah, and the thing is, we have to skirt that line a lot because a lot of what we do here is, this game is deeply offensive. Let me show you why. is there any voice you can't do?
I mean, obviously.
Well, okay, but any one that you wish you could, but you can't?
I mean, there are ones I wish I was better at.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that's super difficult to get right that I wish I could do, which is the South African.
Oh, yeah, that is a weird, that's a tough accent.
Man. It's so difficult.
I'm trying to do some Charlto Copley. And that's a weird, it's one of those, it's just like, it sounds like when you're trying to do it or when you hear someone really speaking it for the first time. Like, I grew up with a girl in my high school who was from South Africa, and the first couple of times I heard her talk, I thought she was making the accent up. I was like, is this a gag? No one calls stoplights robots. What are you doing? Yeah. All right. Okay. Next question comes to us from a fan of the show and fellow San Diego Monkey Pie Quinn, or @MonkeyPieQuinn on Twitter. And he just, very simple question, favorite trash RPG?
Ooh. Yeah, that's right. I meant to look this one over harder.
Oh, that's okay. Well, we can do this.
This is definitely the Sesame Street RPG. It is my favorite trash one. Playing as Oscar is always the best.
Whereas mine is going to be Human Occupied Landfill, a game set on a landfill planet. Actually, I can't even say that. Even among games set on trash planets, it's the worst game I've ever read. So let's see. My favorite trash. In this case, it'd be something that's like a beloved RPG that you know isn't very good. And so I'm going to throw it to Tales from the Floating Vagabond because the rules don't really work. It's got some major typos in it that straight up break it. The author straight up refuses to put out that new edition. But I loved that game. It was so well written and so funny when it first came out. So that's my favorite trash RPG. Anyone else?
I think I'm going to jump in. I will say an RPG that is universally beloved, but also has so much trash and baggage with it. That would be Shadowrun.
Ooh, yeah. Shadowrun, definitely.
Shadowrun is great, but it is also a hot, steaming pile of garbage. And every new edition seems to create more problems than it solves.
That, definitely. That's the thing with Shadowrun where the concept is so evocative that you're like, oh man, I can't wait to play as gritty street running neuromancer types, like just sticking it to the man in the near future, and there's orcs too. And then the reality is this game is so complicated. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Heroes Unlimited because that game is amazing and also the worst.
All right. There you go. Everyone's got a favorite game that they know isn't all that good. That's fair. Okay, and this one comes to us from @IamKevinBates. And I'm not sure. It starts with more seriously, which means I probably missed a question from him. So let's not worry about that. Let's just go with more seriously. If you could have access to any IP and make your own RPG for it, which would it be, and what would the RPG be like?
It's the Golden Girls RPG.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All of the classes
like?
Are the different main characters.
Oh, so you don't play as Blanche, you play as a Blanche?
I am a level 12 Blanche.
Okay. So that means your party can have two Blanches in it?
Oh, obviously.
Is there an expansion for Golden Hotel or Golden Palace or whatever they called it? The
Golden Palace, isn't that the thing that the like casino. Boxers get tattooed on themselves?
Yeah, it's the casino. But they also, Golden Girls semi-famously, its last season is that two of them quit and then the other two build a hotel.
And then it turned out that John Goodman had a heart attack?
It's the last season of Roseanne, but yes. No, that last season of Golden Girls is crazy. Don Cheadle's on it.
Don Cheadle's on it?
Yeah, he works in the hotel. It's insane. But anyway, okay, so you're doing a Golden Girls RPG.
Yep.
I actually have a long-standing answer to this because it's one of the couple of major licenses that should have gotten an RPG that didn't. Harry Potter famously does not have a real RPG.
Yeah.
But my answer is going to be Jurassic Park.
Okay.
It does not have an RPG, and how cool would it be to play a survival horror Jurassic Park? You could use the Call of Cthulhu engine and just have the adversaries be dinosaurs that are just running around, and you have to escape them. Or, if you wanted, you could switch the structure of the game enough that you could actually play as raptors, and it would be a game where you have to eat people who are attempting to escape the park.
That's an amazing take on it.
Or you could get to the point where you've tamed them, and so you're riding around on them. Now, obviously, you're going to be a Confederate soldier as well.
Oh my
with
God.
A big swanging dick.
Okay, but yeah, Jurassic Park has always been my answer to this. It's bereft of an RPG, and dinosaurs running around in modern-day semi-horror. Maybe you're playing as like a dinosaur hunter or something, depending on how many years after the original movie you set it, has always been a dream RPG of mine.
That is a good pick.
You got one?
I think, okay, there are two ways to go with this. Like, you are absolutely right in that Harry Potter needs an RPG.
Yeah.
I don't think that I would be competent enough as a designer to do it, but I am just sorely tempted because I know that if the IP fell into my hands, it would be under my publishing company, and I could put out a literal shit with Harry Potter logo on it and collect thousands upon thousands of dollars, no matter what.
Yeah, it's so weird that it's missing from the market.
It's a real temptation, but I am going to have to say, instead, if I were to get any IP, I would want Cartoon Network's Steven Universe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey. No, I'm a huge fan. That's a great universe. Yeah, definitely.
It's like so ripe for RPGs, and also it has this sort of family and relationships dynamic to the show. Like, combat's in there, but it's not the most important thing happening. And I also really want to find a good mechanical solution for players being able to fuse.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's a great design challenge.
Yeah. It would just create a sub-game of everyone as John briefly.
Yes.
The two characters bidding for control, or two players bidding for control of the character in an attempt to accomplish whatever goal it has when you're playing as, like, Sugalite or whatever. That would be really neat. Yeah, I could definitely see that. That would be really fun. I'd also, speaking of cartoons that are ostensibly for kids but are really for adults, I'd also like to see a Gravity Falls RPG.
Ooh, yeah.
because it's all that cool mystery stuff going on. And it's, again, it's just like your Steven Universe or Golden Sky stories, where it would be a game that could be played with a degree of innocence that's usually lacking from RPG design.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, like,
yeah, it's less about going and murdering the monsters and more finding out what the monster wants.
Yeah. I feel like that's an untapped market.
And the, honestly, like, if you put out games for those properties that are really good, you get more kids playing role-playing games, so that everybody wins.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. So, okay, I think I figured out why his question started with more seriously, because I have a second question from him here, which was the first one. So let's all go back and answer this one first. Okay. Favorite trash movie? Something so bad it goes back around and becomes good.
Ooh.
Okay, so a movie that's so bad that you love it anyway. I'm going to say Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Terrible, terrible, badly put together, hard to understand what's going on, very forgettable, except for the amazing acting performances and the fact that the movie is awesome.
Yep. Man, so, why was there never a sequel?
I know. I really want to see him take on the World Crime League.
And it's such a weird way to escalate for that character, right? Because he already beat interdimensional aliens. Why is the World Crime League the next adventure?
It's like those animes where they're like, and then I defeated God, and now I must fight my brother.
Oh, yeah. That's Naruto is the biggest purveyor of that problem, where it's like, you have to fight this giant glowing demon. Next time, you have to fight a kid from a different school, because everyone in that school is way better than you. Where were they when the 50-foot demon showed up?
Yeah.
Finals.
Training. All right. Well, okay. So that's mine. Buckaroo Banzai. Anyone else?
I'm going to go with my favorite bad movie that loops back around for me is the old made-for-TV It.
Okay.
Ooh.
I love that so much. Tim Curry as Pennywise the Clown is one of the, like, enduring nightmare fuel things from my childhood, where I love horror movies. Absolutely consume them whenever I can. And his version of Pennywise is still one of those things that I'm like, yeah, that'll pop up in a nightmare now and again.
That's good. I like that.
Oh, yeah. He's just like, hello, Georgie. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm done.
Yeah. What's the beep, beep?
Beep, beep, Richie.
Richie. That's God, that's so well done. Although, I honestly, Tim Curry could read a Yellow Pages and I would be completely riveted.
I am going to have to go with The Mummy. Like Brandon Fraser's The Mummy.
Oh, yes.
Because that movie, like, obviously, it's not great. There's a lot of 90s CGI and racism.
Yeah,
like, a lot of overt racism.
Yeah.
But, man, that's the best D&D party that I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah. And I'll say, despite the overt racism, the character playing the Egyptian guy, Oded Fehr playing Ahmed Bey in that movie.
Yeah.
Iconic. One of my favorite roles in a movie. I still am sad every day that I don't see him on TV or something. He was recently on that spin-off episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I was so excited I nearly fainted.
I was like one of those fainting goats.
Oh, I was like, Oded Fehr, yes!
His legs straight up in the air.
Oded Fehr, meh!
That's a good one. Man, I can still just sit there quoting his lines from that. Frankly, I would prefer the Thompson. Oh, okay, let's see. Here's another question that's very specifically for you, because we are not there with our Patreon yet to go to Gen Con. Will there be an NPC drinking game at Gen Con?
As I said on Twitter, because I needed to clarify whether this was a special variant of NPC designed for drinking or just drinking while playing the game, and mm-hmm. this person said both. I could make that a social goal or a stretch goal if people are interested. You can tweet at me, and you know, we'll add it to the list. If you want a special drinking variant of NPC at Gen Con, you'll have to hit some level. So just tweet at me if that's an idea that you're into. Otherwise, we are definitely doing our now, or at least this year, we'll solidify it as a Gen Con tradition, where we're going to do a panel. And after the panel, we'll take everybody out at the panel out drinking with us. And of course, we'll play some NPC while we're out.
What you probably need for something like that is like 10 more of those phrase cards that all have kind of I love you, man type lines on them. And then all of the challenge, the flip over emotion challenge line would be things like blotto and soused.
Nah, man, if you really want the challenge, it's non-slurred.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Understandable.
That's good.
And well, all the characters are just famous drunk people, W.C. Fields. And
one of the mechanics for the game, when you can't decide between two people because they both gave a good read, they can duel. And they duel by throwing down an additional modifier on whatever the character card is and trying to, like, if you were reading for a sad vampire before, you now have to read for an uncomfortably sexy sad vampire to make it more challenging. So obviously drinking has to be a part of that dueling system.
Oh, yeah. Instead of putting those cards down, it's just Jaeger bombs.
Yes.
All right, let's move on here. I've got a question from – I got a lot of questions left, and we don't have that much time left, so I'm going to be a little picky. I'm going to go to – I want an original cosmic horror setting from – oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to credit at Ed Gelland Games for that question. Next one comes to us from at Space Dickhead, and he asks
– It's Edgeland.
Edgeland?
Edgeland Games.
Oh, no, it's Ed Gelland. No, it's a guy named Ed Gelland. I just made this up, I'm sure. No, it's Ed Gel and Games.
Ed Gel and Games.
Yeah, it's Ed Gel and Games. Okay, this one comes to us from Spac Ed Ickhead.
God damn you.
And he asks, I want an original cosmic horror setting for a game. What animal should I replace octopuses with?
Raccoons.
Raccoons, pretty scary, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're octopuses going through your trash. And they're wearing little bandit masks.
Oh, so you're in your version of this, you are taking an animal that exists already and replacing it with the octopus.
That's what he asked for. No. I am literally replacing an animal with an octopus.
See, because I'm thinking that traditionally tentacles coming out of everywhere is the cosmic horror thing. So he's saying what new animal thing should come out of holes into nothing and be on the head of this winged guy that came up from the ocean.
No, I'm just going with trashtopuses.
Okay.
I actually put a little thought into this question because I saw it before we got on to the show. And I was thinking, like, realistically, the places that people go when they're trying to create those Lovecraftian horrors are something underwater or insectoid. Like, those are the things that freak us out the most. And it's really hard to come up with something that is not directly referencing one of those.
Right.
I was racking my brain for it. I think the best solution in my book is to look at bacteria viruses and, like, try to riff on something like that. Like, obviously, a lot of them just look like fuzzy turds, but the ones that don't look really weird and interesting.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I think Lovecraft may have actually done that himself a little bit. I've always thought that the Mego kind of have a viral look to them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, and like the Shuggoth, they're like just a weird pile of stuff, right? Eyes and mouths and stuff.
Yeah, they're basically amoebas. Yeah. So
plus the idea with like viruses that they just inject themselves into your cell and then replicate and explode out of the cells into little versions of them.
Yeah.
Like that is just some cosmic horror shit going on at a micro scale.
You know what? You're not wrong, because out of the entire hour and a half that was Cloverfield, the only part that was interesting was when that lady blew up because she got injected by one of those flea things earlier.
Oh my God, spoiler alert.
Oh, spoiler alert for Cloverfield, everyone. My apologies. Also, Cloverfield Lane.
I just saw 10 Cloverfield Lane last night.
Does it have anything at all to do with Cloverfield?
Probably not.
Okay, good. Just that's all I need. No other spoilers. Just curious. I would love to know if who is J.J. Abrams, right?
Yeah.
I'd love to know if he had any say in that name.
There's no way.
Yeah,
there's absolutely no way.
He was like, "Hey guys, I'd like to make a bottle horror movie, so everyone's stuck in an underground thing and it's just ratcheting tension." And they were like, "You can do it if you call it Cloverfield in some way.
You can do it if it's called 10 Star Trek Lane."
You could also do it if one of the characters discusses the ending of Lost and what that was all about.
No, that's if I was in charge of the movie.
If I was in charge of the movie, I would have taken J.J. Abrams off it.
Aww.
I like him and all, but his adherence to secrecy is infuriating.
Oh, God. It's so annoying. It makes me want to beat him up like the fat nerd he is.
Yeah.
But it's so unnecessary. Like, you're not making it better with this. Just stop.
Well, it ruined that second Star Trek movie for him. Yeah. Above all, if he had been like, "Look, I'm putting what's his name, Khan, in this movie, and he's played by Cumberbatch," then the whole world could have uprose earlier, and he could have fixed it.
Right.
Anyway, let's see. I have to do. I'm going to go through this one super fast. It's pretty much just me, because recently our fans learned that I am a moderately competent chef. And so it's, can I get a recipe for chicken? And also, can you put that chicken recipe and the pulled pork recipe on the fridge? Because I did a pulled pork recipe for everyone a while back. All right. I wrote it out so I can go through this real fast. So, folks, you might need to slow this down or just listen to it a bunch of times.
Or just go look at it on the website.
Or that. Here we go. Get some chicken breasts and cut them in half lengthwise. I usually do this with 3 to 4 chicken breasts, but this recipe works fine with any piece of chicken. Put those chicken pieces in a big Ziploc bag with some salt and some white pepper. You'll want white pepper because it's a little milder. Then put it in the Ziploc bag and then knead it all over so the chicken's covered in it. Then take the bottom of a heavy cup and just smack the chicken around with that a little bit so it's nice and flat. Now, take some potatoes, cut them into quarters. Do the same thing with the salt and pepper, but don't smack them. Put all that stuff in the bottom of a thick-sided baking dish. Then, oh, make sure that it's not stacked on top of each other. You want them pretty much laid out evenly. Now, mix half a cup of lemon juice with a full cup. Hang on, let me make sure I've got that right. No, it's a half a cup of olive oil with a full cup of lemon juice. Add about 6 cloves of crushed garlic and stir that together. Pour that liquid over the chicken and potatoes. Make sure there's a little bit of chicken and potatoes still sticking up over the liquid. Cover that with foil. Put it in a 425-degree oven for half an hour. Open the oven. Pull off the foil. Crank the heat to 475. Close the oven. Cook for another half hour. Pull it
Throw
out.
It away. Go to Jack in the Box. Get a Jumbo Jack. Done.
That's called Lebanese chicken. It's the simplest chicken recipe in the world, and it is unbelievably satisfying. All you need to do is throw a little salad and some pita on the side, and you're done. So, there you go. Chicken recipe. That'll be on the fridge.
Boom.
Okay.
It sounds good.
It is good. Oh, I couldn't believe how good it is. The first time I made it, I accidentally used lime juice because I wasn't paying attention. Still really good. Okay.
Good to know.
Hey, System Masterinos, I have a few questions for you. This one's from before we put the Twitter thing out, so you may not have too much ease here, but I'm going to pick and choose a few of these, McMagnum, and we'll come back to some more of them later. So first one, number two, what is the weirdest version of a famous, or weirdest D&D version of a famous mythological monster?
Ooh.
I'm going to go with Minotaur.
Okay.
Because it turned it into a race.
Yeah.
And it was just a one-shot monster, so mm-hmm. turning it into an entire thing that exists was kind of weird for me.
I can give you the weirdest one, because I'm going to take the one where they took a woman whose head has snakes for hair, and her gaze turns people to stone, which was the Gorgon, and they turned that into a metal cow that breathes poison.
Actually, there is precedent for that in other mythology.
Oh, okay.
The cool. Gorgon is actually a thing that is not called the Gorgon, and I guess they just went with the Medusa as Medusa because it's more famous for that.
Fair enough. Okay, well, that's good. I've always been confused by that, so I'm glad to hear it. The first time I saw that, I was like, wait, why is the Gorgon a metal cow that breathes poison? That doesn't line up for me at all.
Also, there's a great this weird burrowing
write-up that somebody did on it. I'll try and like email it over to you guys so you can link to it. It's a fascinating article if you're a big, stupid nerd.
Well, no, and I absolutely am. To me, the Gorgon from D&D, the big metal cow, seems very much like a Sumerian or a Babylonian thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like something that's older than the Greek myths.
Yeah. It is. I wish I had retained it better, because it was cool to learn that that was a thing and not just a weird, silly mistake that Gygax made for some reason.
Yeah, fair enough. So you got one?
I do. I'm going to go with the Tarrasque, because
we
know it, is nothing like its origin at all.
Yeah, it's a French dragon.
It's a French dragon that is a weird, sad story, because the Tarrasque, like, actually wants to be around people, but they keep trying to murder it. It's bizarre. It's not like the all-hungry monster that just devours and is unkillable. So, yeah, that is a weird direction they took that.
Yeah, no, it was interesting that they picked that one and then was like, all right, this is going to be the huge super monster that requires 8 different things to kill. But historically, it doesn't line up, so that's a really good choice. Okay, we'll come back to the rest of your questions, McMagnum. I'm going to get a few more of these in. This one comes from Evil Bruce Greenwood. And the reason it comes from Evil Bruce Greenwood is because I spent about 6 episodes in a row thinking that Ed Greenwood's name is Bruce. Here's the thing about my brain, folks. I retain every single little bit of information I've ever read about any RPG ever, except for any names in it.
Yeah, you
or
have
any names
a bag
at all.
With chicken, just shake it up and then you mash it with the end of a cup, right?
Yeah. That's exactly, yeah. But
it is also why during RPG sessions, he has to write down the names of people, because he will never remember anyone's name.
I'm going to give you the ultimate example of how bad I am with names. I called John Jeff once.
It's true. It's real sad and true.
Yeah, I'm getting old so fast it hurts. All right, so anyway, the question from Evil Bruce Greenwood is, what makes you think Zack Snyder is so terrible?
His movies.
His body of work, yeah.
His attitude in interviews. There we go. I think we covered it. That was a good, easy question.
Knocked that one out of the park.
All right. The only things we have left here are a couple of great big questions, but I think we can fit one more in, and that's going to be this one from Matthew Lucas. If you didn't get in otherwise, don't worry about it. We always have afterthoughts coming out. I am currently working through your old episodes. I finally hit Duckman, and the Heaven and Earth episode got me thinking about alternatives to dice. Heaven and Earth used a deck of cards, which I recently learned you can do in Fate as well, and I know there's a horror game out there that uses a set of Jenga blocks, and of course he's talking about Dread there, which I can see James coming to life, because Dread is awesome.
Yes.
Are there any other alternatives to dice that you're aware of? Can you think of any others that haven't been used that you know of that may make a good alternative to dice? Let me start here real quick. First of all, yes, because we read a game, and you'll get to it eventually, Matthew, when you're going through, called, God, what's it called, John? It's the one with dominoes. It's the where you play as bugs.
Oh, yeah.
Numenon. It's actually, it uses dominoes as its mechanic, and you actually have to put dominoes out, and then other people have to match dominoes to accomplish tasks. That was cool. I will also say that I did figure out a item that hasn't been used in an RPG before, but you can't hear about it because it's going to be in my entry to the 200-word RPG challenge.
Ooh.
Yeah. Secretive. So anyone else got ideas?
Yeah, well, my favorite, that is apart from Dread, because Dread is fantastic, but my favorite right now is a little game that was put in one of Epidiah Ravichal, the designer of Dread, one of his magazines called A Scoundrel in the Dark. And it is a one-on-one role-playing game where the player is playing like a thiefy type character trying to escape a dungeon. And one of the mechanics is lighting a match, and you have until that match burns down to your fingers to accomplish various tasks.
Oh, that's
it is
cool.
Fascinating, yeah. And weird and great.
Yeah, we saw Book of Matches in last year's 200-word RPG challenge as well. It was a post-apocalyptic survival game, and I'm afraid I don't remember the name of it because it's a name. What you did during the game, though, is you lit a match to burn one of your resources, because it was supposed to be after the apocalypse, resources were super scarce. So if you burnt a match, you could say, oh, I had this friend named Jenny, and she helped me in this way, but as a result of helping me, she died. And so you lit these matches, and when you let them burn out, it really had a kind of... And the same thing with the game you're describing, it's visceral.
Yeah. It's cool because it puts the pressure on you too when you're holding that burning match. Like, it's going to hurt your fingers if you take too long, but you want to try and accomplish as much as possible while that match is burning. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that. John, you got one?
I think the only really other popular ones, you've got the dice cards and so on. You've got rock, paper, scissors for all of your LARPers out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think after that, your famous story of playing D&D while hiking using a stopwatch instead of dice.
Yep. Yeah. I did that for years. We would backpack and we would keep our HP totals tracked on by writing them in pen on our arm. And we would use the millisecond hand of a stopwatch as our D20s.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. Because we had memorized basic D&D.
Ooh, not cool.
Yeah, not only had we memorized D&D basic, but we had made up the gnome for it. So you could play as a gnome if you wanted, and we had also memorized those rules.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, it was really fun. It kept us hiking for hours. So there you go. That's good. I've always thought that there's a market. I don't know why this doesn't exist. So, by the way, James, I know that you actually have have gotten to the point in your podcasting career where you have an empire. So if you want to make a Pop-O-Matic D20, I don't know why that doesn't exist, but Pop-O-Matic D20 and Pop-O-Matic 3D6 are things that need to exist and be sold.
Yeah, so I was actually looking at the April Fool's stuff for ThinkGeek, and this year they came up with this dumb, like, augmented reality version of D&D, but the little device that they were saying it was this wristband with a Pop-O-Matic D20.
Oh, damn, so someone got there. All right.
Well, no. They don't actually sell it. They're like, ha, 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 this fake product. And I'm like sitting there looking at the screen like, are you kidding me? You know how many people would buy that?
Well, you know, one of the things they sell at the local nerd store for us is D20 rings.
Yeah, that was a cool idea.
Yeah, I didn't like them that much when I actually tried one on and spun it because it felt like it was sticky.
Well, yeah, you have to wash them first.
Yeah. But otherwise, they were a cool idea. So there you go. Various versions of dice are fun, but and again, if you wait until that 200 word RPG challenge and you read my entry, you'll see my crazy idea. So I'll tell you off mic, but I won't tell the world.
And then he'll tell the world.
And if you want to see more on One Shot, where we try to feature as many of those non-dice systems as we can. If you're interested in one, hit us up and let us know about it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think we have a few more questions here, but I think we'll just push them off for next week. We are almost over already, and honestly, we didn't record anything before this yet. So... So, once again, we just really want to thank James D'Amato. Why don't you take one last chance to push your game so folks can hear all about it?
Yeah, that is Noisy Person Cards. That is going to be on Kickstarter, hopefully April 11th. If not, it'll go up April 18th. But right now, we are on track for the 11th. If you want to look it up right now and it's not April the 11th, you can go to paracosmpress.com. That's paracosmpress.com/NPC. There you can download the free print and play copy of the game and sign up for the mailing list so that you'll be notified as soon as it goes up.
Absolutely. And of course, the System Mastery, we would definitely recommend the game. It looks awesome. We are always about, I mean, people think that our job is to professionally hate games, and it comes out that way a lot of the time, but we are all about innovation in games. We dislike the stagnant. That's why we do what we do. And this sounds like a great idea. It's a great way to shake people up and get them up and moving around and thinking about how to role play. So I think it sounds awesome. I look forward to trying it out. So there you go. Once again, thanks very much to James D'Amato for coming by, and make sure to check out his shows. I mean, I don't know who I'm kidding. If you're here, it's because you came to us from his shows. But just in case, those are the One Shot RPG Network, which also has One Shot RPG and the Campaign Podcast, and also I was on this podcast, and the name is
Critical Success.
Thank you. As I know, there's a Critical Hit podcast out there too, and I'm like, that's not him. But Critical Success, which is his kind of the discussion and sort of deep dive examination into what makes RPGs RPGs podcast, which is also super cool. So check all those out. And James, thanks so much for coming by. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me. I enjoy listening to you every week. So it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. As always, you can find us at systemmasterypodcast.com, where we do our weekly or every other weekly review of a bad RPG and our every other weekly discussion about RPGs and question answering session. We also do our movie mastery reviews coming out later this week. We'll have a movie mastery episode for you. I can give you a hint. Cavemen teddy bears. All right. And otherwise, support us on our Patreon if you like, and buy t-shirts from us if you want. I don't care. Have a great week, and have a good week.
And a great week.
And a great week.
And a good week.
And a great good week. All right.